The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
I think we'll have to start off the show, Cheddar, because you weren't here on Monday, with giving Ballyhale a bit of a shout-out. Seven All-Ireland club titles in their history in eight finals. So they won seven of eight finals, which is incredible. Blue Thomas is away. We have Joey Holden coming up on the show later on. So, like, I mean, an incredible club from such a small rural area.
Look, there's been a lot written about Ballyhale, obviously, over the last number of years. Look, it's an incredible story, really, I suppose. It's a combination of, I think, maybe two previous junior clubs or maybe three junior clubs going way back. And I suppose it just tells you what, you know, real dedication by, you know, a small number of people in a rural area in terms of what they can deliver. And I think, you know, it's been mentioned as well, and I think maybe Chef mentioned it as well, you know, the number of real top quality players that they would have, you know, taken through the ranks in that 30, 40 years. It's incredible. Some of the best players that's ever played, including a couple before they were formed, actually, because, you know, some of the older listeners, Willie, will certainly remember Frank Cummins, done a lot of his club hurling in Cork City, actually, where he was working. But he was previously a Shamrocks man. I think he's an October man, actually, or somewhere around that area. Sort of an incredible amount of, you know, incredibly gifted players from Shefflin to TJ to, you know, a whole host of Fennellys. I mean, there was a time when Liam Fennelly was probably regarded as one of the greatest forwards ever played. You know, so it is, it's an incredible turnaround. And I suppose, you know, it goes back a little bit, Willie, I suppose, to, you know, rural clubs, what drive them. Certainly families drive them. And even when you look, this is a complete new team, by the way, driven really by an under-21 championship that was won by Ballyhale last year. When I stand corrected on this, and you know, maybe some Kilkenny supporters might correct this, but I actually think they won that final by not playing some of their marquee players that they had playing last Sunday. And it just, I suppose, tells you that the standards and the discipline that's within, and the culture, I suppose, that's within the club, you know, and obviously that serves them well.
Yeah, why wouldn't they have played them? Or they were injured, they missed the final?
I think they missed the final, I don't want to go into the details, but it was a disciplinary issue, I think, within the club, and they took a stand on it. And not alone did they not play, they actually won the final. And, you know, all of those things are sort of important in terms of establishing culture, that, you know, the right way of doing things. And if you do the wrong way, there's going to be consequences. And, you know, what was brilliant about that is that those players played last Sunday and were probably the best players, some of the best players in the field. So it just tells you the depth of riches, I suppose, that the club has. But look, that doesn't come easy. You know, it takes a huge amount of work. You know, we have discussed this before, Willie, of what's needed to be a hurler. It's a very, very technical game. You kind of just rely on DNA, even though it's helpful, to reach the standard that they are at. And there's a couple of young players that I think that have been called into the Kilkenny panel that, you know, may very well actually start with Kilkenny in championship this year, including the likes of Adrian Mullen and that. You know, so it is an incredible story from Ballyhale, and this, you know, their success over the years, and the amount of quality players have contributed to Kilkenny, like it's you know, it's fair going.
It's the gene pool, yeah, the DNA, maybe, Cheddar. Maybe this should start charging stud fees or something like that for some of these lads that when they retire. Well, we might need to send some Portlaoise women over to this one pub in Ballyhale and maybe create some connections.
I won't comment on that, Willie.
So Joey Holden, I did the interview with him yesterday, and they celebrated Monday and Tuesday, Cheddar, and lo and behold, back training with Kilkenny last night. I was thinking, Jesus, that's some going. There's seven of them called in to the Kilkenny panel, and you just think of an All-Ireland club final win. So you might have the Monday, I don't know, would they have had a couple of pints? I think that they would have had a few, but they wouldn't have had too many if they were back training with Kilkenny last night. So, Jesus, a fairly quick turnaround, isn't it, when it's kind of explained to you that clearly?
Yeah, no, that's true. And they have a couple of more players, actually, maybe two or maybe three, that hurled with Kieran's yesterday, and they're going to hurl with Kieran's down in All-Ireland, that actually played last Sunday as well. I just keep going back to that word. You know, there is a special culture about that. And look, it's driven by, I suppose, you know, there's a carrot at the end of working hard here, and that's playing in All-Irelands and winning in All-Irelands. And, you know, that has been proven over the last number of years. But there's also a savage amount of competition in the Kilkenny team, even currently. And, you know, one might say it's in a small bit of a transition phase at the minute. And look, that this team is going to settle probably this year. And it may very well settle like it did previously to play in another 7 or 8 or 10 All-Irelands. And you better be in the right place at the right time, because if you're not and somebody else gets in ahead of you and gets the jersey, you may not get it back. And I suppose it's that real competitive culture I'm talking about here, built up by a huge amount of support from within the communities, and that this is what's expected. You know, so I'm not surprised that that's the case, that the players are back training already. And, you know, certainly some of those young players that I've mentioned earlier on, look, their next objective is to grab a Kilkenny senior jersey and play in you know, county All-Irelands and that. And it is going to be competitive. There's a lot of young players in Kilkenny at the minute that you know, will see themselves in the same position. So you've got to fight for your jersey here, and just simply not turning up the week or a fortnight after winning an All-Ireland club final mightn't serve you well in that race for the jersey.
No, definitely not. Well, definitely not 2 weeks, but I would like more than 2 days anyways before Cody gets his hands back on me. But like, I mean, I don't think I'd last too long under Cody anyways. But so Christy O'Connor had a good piece on the RTE website, and he was talking about all the shops in the village of Ballyhale are gone. The post office is also closed. There's just a pharmacy, a cafe and one pub. Like, I mean, I couldn't believe that. And just on a similar team, Connor Cooney was talking in the lead up to the game, and he was talking about rural Ireland, and like, he was talking the GEA need to do more for rural Ireland. And geez, I'm not sure, like, it's a GEA issue. It's definitely a wider societal issue that rural Ireland, the post office is closing, like the big towns, that's where everybody goes to work. And, you know, like, I mean, teams are amalgamating. I'm not sure what the GEA can do to help this, but like, we see the example in Laois Cheddar, loads of clubs, Clock Ballacolla, Rathdowney Earl, what's the other ones? Boris Kilcotton is the newest one. They won one. Park Ratneska have joined up with Timahoe. Like, I mean, it makes the championship better because there's more stronger teams. But like, these used to be good, strong clubs in their own right.
Yeah, and look, I suppose, you know, one of them is a societal issue, really. And look, it is a serious, serious problem here. There's no doubt about it that, you know, villages in rural Ireland are on their last legs. If you're looking at the sort of social cohesion that we would have seen over the previous decades. And I think that's something that really needs to be looked at. Look, there would be a school of thought that would say, look, why wouldn't you combine it all into the cities? Your central service is much cheaper to do that, you know, maybe better environments and so on and so on. But I think you have a huge amount of social issues as well. You know, I obviously come from Port Laoise, which is, you know, a pretty large provincial town, and there certainly would be some serious social issues that, you know, I think if population would disperse better, I think it would be better. And there is no doubt, but I think an awful lot of villages are going to end up, you know, with a very aged population, and who's going to look after that at the minute? And there's huge issues around crime and all of that. But look, and this is sort of turned into a political show at the minute, Willie, and that, you know, we're not going to go there. We'll keep it to the sport. So let's get back to that. Certainly the GAA has a role to play, and not necessarily the GAA, like, we, you know, we fly that flag the whole time in terms of the GAA being a community organisation and that, which it is. But look, other sports need to come up to the mark here as well, you know, whether it's the local soccer team or whatever it is, need to come up to the mark here.
How can the GAA help Ballyhale Shamrocks? Look, Ballyhale Shamrocks don't need much help, but how can the GAA help a small rural club whose youth, teenagers are going to college in a city and then getting a job in a city? You know, what can the GAA do to actually fix that?
Well, I think, well, even just the mere fact that the club is there makes it interesting for the young person to come home from college. And certainly there's a focal point around the village or around the community to do with that. So the mere fact that it's there and that it's relevant within the community is really, really important here. And, you know, sometimes you don't see that. You don't understand the importance of that until you stand back and look at it. But I think, you know, it has served the GAA well to be non-political, and, you know, nobody will want them to step outside of that, except in exceptional circumstances. But this is a little bit more than that. This is about communities and that. And I think the influence that the GAA can draw on, at the end of the day, these are political questions that need to be resolved by political people. At the end of the day, that's where the power is going to lie. And I think the GAA can certainly lean on that and be much more influential on that. And even if that's around, you know, housing plans or population shifts. I mean, there was a good initiative a couple of years ago about government services moving down the country. I know they moved to larger urban areas, but it also sort of filtered out to the rural areas around there. So there's a certain amount of initiatives like that that I think GAA can influence politicians to change policy on certain things like this, which I think would benefit society and certainly would benefit rural communities. So I think even the mere fact, I mean, you go back to Ballyhale, you've got Ballyhale and Knocktofer, they're two villages, people know them well if they're travelling from Kilkenny to Waterford, travelling from Dublin down to Waterford. And look, they're small, but the mere fact that there's an actual cohort of people closely together in a village like that can give a certain amount of spirit and pride to the area. And I think, you know, even having a successful team, you know, is hugely important in those areas because it gives a sense of identity. And, you know, even if that's a young fellow going to WIT or he's going to, you know, he could be going to NUIG or some college, even up the north or up to Belfast. The mere fact that you know, this week he's able to mention he's from Ballyhale has a certain, there's a certain ring to that, and it certainly gives a sense of identity and a sense of place to people. And ultimately, that's what the GAA is about. It's a sporting organisation, but ultimately, it's about a sense of place. You referred to the amalgamations. I think it's a different issue, Woolley, but you know, it is aligned to that. It certainly will work well, and it has served Leash Hurling well, and has obviously served those clubs well. It has some downsides. You know, the lesser number of clubs, the lesser there's opportunities for some players to play at a, you know, a reasonably high level. So I think it needs to be looked at. It's not just a quick fix of some of these issues. You know, one of the downsides is that, so in an amalgamated club, particularly if there were two former senior clubs, is there enough space for everybody to be able to play in that? And of course, that raises its own issues then, because their second team may be stronger than some local junior team, you know, in the next parish. And that denies them the opportunity then to push on.
Yeah, there's a knock-on effect.
There's a knock-on effect to all of these things. But there definitely is a solution within all of that. And you know, one of the other solutions is, you know, in terms of actually combining a lot of those junior clubs together into an area team, which is not dissimilar to Cork, maybe not as big as that. And, you know, looking at structuring our championship, I think the prism that should be looked at is, how can we ensure enough quality game for all of our players, the you know, the top performance and the middle performance and the lower performance? How can we structure our championship and then go back to our clubs and restructure ourselves to make sure that that happens?
Yeah. Because I think that's a good point, the Kerry model and stuff, that you're not necessarily, because those amalgamations have that knock-on effect at intermediate level, and then that's distorted at intermediate level, whereas if you play all the championships off as normal, but then in the senior championship let the area teams come together and challenge the Port Leashes, you know, to use Leash as an example, or the bigger clubs, that seems like a really good solution. That almost, like, often I was thinking down through the years that Kerry have a really complicated championship, when in actual fact it gives every player in the whole county a chance to play senior hurling or football.
I think that's brilliant, and I think if a player is ambitious and wants to reach to the top, look, you will definitely improve by playing at a higher level. I mean, the whole science or any coach will tell you that. And I think that some of the tricks to look at is, can we leave a sufficient window within the county championships, within the county, to play off junior championships, and then to be able to amalgamate some teams to play off in a senior championship? And I think that's definitely doable. You know, of course, that time has been sort of constricted a little bit by the you know, the league championship at county level now. And I just think, and I've said this before, Woolley, on it, I think, you know, if you've got enough, there's enough intelligent people in the GAA to bring a couple of people together to fix this. And, you know, some of the solutions we might have to bite hard on, and that may very well be that a county team would train along with the club team during the week. So you might do two nights training with the county and maybe one night with the club, or three nights with the county and two nights with the club, or whatever that is. But there's definitely a solution there within the whole mix to be able to provide proper windows for all championships, so as all players can play at an appropriate level and yet finish off that championship by year end. You know, I see there were some comments recently from a GAA committee about playing it over 13 months. I don't see a need to do that. I certainly think that the All-Ireland that we saw last Sunday could be played off on, you know, the first Sunday in December or something like that. It might be absolutely suitable for hurling, but look, you're not going to get everything right.
Well, that's the thing, because the attendance was very, very poor for both finals. It was 17,819. Last year's was only 15,500, but that was on the same day as the Ireland playing in the Grand Slam, the final game of the Grand Slam. Usually it's averaging around 30,000. So the club finals on St. Patrick's Day, unfortunately, I think, you know, are maybe a thing of the past. It loses all its momentum. Before Christmas, we're all crazy about the club season, and you just love to see it, you know, see it off Croke Park is going to be perfect conditions in December, January anyway. So there's no problem with the finals, even play the semi-finals there. Or, you know, there's no excuse really now not to be at least attempting to try and finish it within the 12 months.
I think without some different type of solutions, Willie, it can't happen because of the way the county championship is structured now, and because of the Munster and Leinster league championship as such, we're going to have to look at some radical way of looking at this.
The intercounty season needs to shorten. Yeah,
it does. And I just think, you could look at, I don't know, is it the North Kerry Senior Football Championship, I think, is played on Stephen's Day. The place is mobbed because there's a culture around that. And I think if the GA sort of stood back and look at his championship structure and all of this first, and then look at a really good PR structure around all of that. How can we promote the games and build them up into a crescendo, like there was a club final last Sunday? How can we do that? There needs to be a lot of work done on that, I think.
Well, that's the thing, and there'll be a lot of just hurling snobs that just listen to the hurling show and not the football show. But we were saying on the football show here recently that if the All-Ireland Club Hurling and Football Finals were played on the week before Christmas, people are coming home for Christmas to their own local areas for a holiday anyways, and they'd all go, and it would actually improve crowds over Christmas.
Even just think of that, will you, for a minute, even in terms of Christmas presents and whatever, I've been in probably at every club final for a long number of years, and something like that, would be very welcome. Incidentally, you spoke about hurling and football, Wooly, and you were right to an extent. I just look at myself and use myself as the example here. I wouldn't often stay around for the football. I did last Sunday, and it was some spectacle of football from Carrigfinn. Certainly some of the most exciting sport of any sport, no matter what it is, in terms of the quality of their play and that, to see how they set themselves up. And I suppose just from a coach's perspective, to see how they set themselves up and their counter-attacking. And to see Kieran Fitzgerald defending his own square at 1 minute, I don't want to put an age in it, but he certainly won't be seeing 30 again. And to see him 1 minute later, looking to score a goal in the opposite square was something else to see, and it was very, very welcome. I go back to the hurling as well. Ballyhale gave an absolute exhibition of hurling last Sunday, and they're looking at the age profile of their team, they can only get better.
I'm impressed. You must have stayed to the end of the football then, Cheddar, if you saw Kieran Fitzgerald cleared off the line for a hurling snob to stay till the end of a one-sided football final. Jeez, that's top-notch stuff altogether. They ended up being two disappointing games because they were one-sided, but there were two, like, you almost just sit there and appreciate the brilliance of both winners more than anything.
Both were exceptional performances.
Yeah, exactly. So there's great value in Nolan Park this weekend, Cheddar. I'd imagine you're going to head over to this. It's only €20 if you pre-purchase, or 25 at the gate, for two brilliant semi-finals. And we complain about different things. You could pay €20 into a county semi-final in Leash sometimes. For anyone that's near Kilkenny on Sunday, they should absolutely be going to this. For €20 pre-booked, you're getting two top quality league semi-finals.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the GA need to be, oftentimes you'd be giving out about things and that, but you also need to flip the coin and commend them at different times. They are a community, and GA is a family oriented organisation, and this makes it a little bit easier. You'd pay €20 to go into a nightclub that you might walk out of 2 or 3 minutes later.
You were on the door.
We won't go into that, Willie, because we'll be here all day if I want to tell some of them stories.
But Cheddar used to be a bouncer on one of the nightclubs when I was a tearaway teen, so that's all. That's the context of that joke. We'll say no more about that, Cheddar, because the thing about it was it's €20 in, but the attendances have been very poor so far in the league. The one in Walsh Park was real standout, a home match, and all the talk about Walsh Park, and only 2,753 showed up to a league quarter final. Incredible. There was more at the Leash Limerick game in Amore Park, where there was an estimated 5,000 at that, and only 3,500 in Semple Stadium. I'm not sure what to put that down to at all. I think maybe the games on television, the weather. I know the Waterford fans showed up to the Galway game and got absolutely lashed out of it, some game in Walsh Park, and maybe they just didn't trust it, and it's on the television, and a bit of laziness comes into play.
I think the weather had something to do with it, Willie. But look, it's in all sports. It's not just necessarily hurling, or it's not just necessarily GAA. There just seems to be, there's so many attractions now that, you know, you're sort of comparing this with maybe even 20 years ago. But if you compare it with 40 years ago, what other attraction would have been would be next Sunday other than to go to a match if you're interested in it? So I think I'm not surprised by this. And I think you'll see spikes in attendances over the next couple of years. And I think also, if you just think of it for a minute, you know, it's quite expensive. You're going to move into a Munster Championship now. Just take Waterford, for example. They're going to move into a Munster Championship. And bear in mind, last year they were driving all over the country in 2018. And you're going to go to three or four more extra matches that you win in other years. And I'd say some people might say, you know, well, let's save the money and let's save it for the Championship and we'll go to it then. So there's probably a number of reasons. But yeah. Again,
it's a shockingly low attendance, though, isn't
it? No, I do agree with you. You know, considering the quality and offer, I mean, yeah. I'd expect 3,000 people to go to see Joe Canning just play. as I know, I'm going back, Willie, a little bit before your time, but I remember times when you could have 3,000 people in for band just to see Tony McTeague play football. That's all they came to see. And, you know, it may be very well the same with the hurlers. I'm just thinking of that one just comes to mind. So it is surprising, yes. But I think that we cannot just accept anymore, because we've quality players and so on, that we don't need to do anything else. I think the PR and all of those things, that, you know, we need to work on all of those. The competition is savage here for audience.
Yeah, hopefully Nolan Park, there'll be no excuse for 15,000-20,000 to be at the league semi-finals. It would be great if there was. Quickly, before we move on to talk to Joey Holden, Davy Fitzgerald was up in the stand against Galway, and he was up there looking in front of, he had his laptop in front of him, and he looked very cosy up there. And then at half time he got pissed off with the referee because the free count was 13-2, and the cameras had him lynching the linesman or the referee at half time. And then he stayed down in the second half, and I didn't actually realise that he always does one half up, one half down. So he was quoted to say, "I'd love to spend a whole lot up there, believe that, I love it, I can see the game, I'm telling you 100%, it's so different being up there than being down. What I came down on the sideline is okay, I think it's important to have a presence on the sideline as well. I'm the manager at the end of the day, so the compromise is that I go up or for one and down for another." And I was interested in this because obviously I see massive advantages of being up there and having your stats right in front of you and being able to get a full view of the whole field, be able to see some off the ball stuff. But I was interested in him saying, I think it's important to have a presence on the sideline as well. Do you think the presence on the sideline is important?
I think it is, Ollie, yes. Look, it depends a lot, I suppose, on the connection between the management and the team. And certainly in Davy's instance, you know, that connection would be very, very strong. And look, there's a lot of things come into this. You know, your leadership on the field, you may very well stand back. If you have sufficient strong leadership on the field to make decisions, you know, you may not need that presence on the sideline. So it's not just a one solution fits all here. There's a number of things, I think, that will come into it. Yeah. But I think it is interesting. Incidentally, I think it happened originally when Davy was banished to the stand below Misford. I think that was but I do remember a number of years ago, it was just when Croke Park opened, and I know I had no one, wasn't thinking about anything at that stage, but I do remember being at a couple of matches. I was very lucky to have a friend with a car that had a corporate box there, and I got used to it a number of times at matches, and was sort of in the centre of the field. And I always said that, you know, if you ever got to Croke Park, you definitely want to use this here, because your view of puck out and movement off the ball and all of those things is just simply so much better.
Yeah.
But look, there's a whole lot of ways of working this. You know, look, considering where technology has gone now, everybody's wired up and mic'd up, and your eyes and ears up in the stand, you know, can transmit the same. And once you're on the same wavelength with somebody that you trust, you know, you're going to get the very, very same information to you anyway. So I don't think it's hugely important now. I think, you know, we've borrowed some things from rugby. I mean, all of the top rugby nations would do it now.
They have nearly the whole management team up there, don't they? They have nothing on the sideline.
They really do, but, you know, and look, that this is where GA is going to go to. You know, you have their management team will be broken down into backs and forwards. The backs are probably not even in, the backs coaches are probably not even interested in looking at what the forwards coaches are doing, or vice versa. They're looking at all their own stats and all their own little key pieces, and they can come back and replay the things and look at the mistakes that they're making, and look at what the other team is doing as well, and you know, be able to communicate things. So I won't be surprised if the GA move a little bit more in that, not necessarily up in the stand, but you're looking at teams, Willie, you know, every county team now as a defensive coach, a forwards coach, puck out coach, all of those things. You know, the level of detail that county management teams go down to now is pretty serious. And I just think where technology is, you know, you'll certainly, you know, you're able to transmit that information very, very quickly, even if you're a coach on the sideline. And if you look at the best, you know, the most successful and best manager of all times on the sideline the whole time, you know, so those facts speak for themselves.
Yeah, it's always been done. But like, I mean, I don't know any big championship game, Cheddar. Sure, you standing on the sideline shouting in with the crowd behind you, sure, players can't hear you. The only player might hear you is a wing back right in front of you. Like, what are you really doing on the sideline then? You know, like, I mean, is the advantages of that brilliant view that you spoke about that I know all about in Croke Park, because the press area is a lovely view and you see so much stuff, that does that not outweigh you trying to roar at the top of your... I remember playing in Croke Park in matches and I'd be wing back or wing forward and the centre back or centre forward can't even hear me when I'm shouting at them. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I mean, you could have somebody run in and say to you, the manager's shouting at you, and you wouldn't even be paying a blind bit of difference to him.
Look, you wouldn't be shouting, or you shouldn't be shouting anyway. And you're right, in Croke Park.
The runners are doing all this now. They do.
You know, this is a word in the ear. And it's not necessarily going in. It's giving instruction, but it's also receiving instruction from your key leaders in the team. Nobody sees better what's going on than your central players. They have the full view of what's going on in front of you, and you know you need to be tapping into what they're saying. So more often than not, you're going into to ask what do they see, and then you know you can take that information to the sideline, and you know you might make some decisions, and you might make the wrong ones. I'm not saying that, but look, that's the communication, I suppose, mediums between the players and the management. Whether you do that in the sideline or whether you do it up in the stands, sometimes it's easier actually to do it in the sideline. You can get that word in or word out, which is even more important, quicker by being on the sideline.
Yeah, I think for Davey's heart, I prefer to see him in the stand. He looks so calm up there, and then on the sideline, he just looks like he's a complete nervous wreck.
About Davey, and I'd be hugely supportive of the man and hugely delighted to see him involved in hurling, but I know a certain amount of referees and sideline men and umpires that would be glad he stays up in the stand.
Yeah, I would agree with that one. Right, we'll come back with Joey Holden.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
So Ballyhale Shamrocks won their 7th All-Ireland Club title on Sunday, and Joey Holden joins us on the line now. Joey, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad now.
How's the head today?
She's a bit shook now. We've had a few days celebrating, so we really enjoyed it now. But back to reality now for a little while, I suppose.
Back to reality. You're back into work. I can't believe it. So, like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're just too used to winning them, Joey. I would have taken the full week off.
No, we can't do that now. No, I have to get back to reality, I suppose. I'm back in training with Kilkenny tonight as well. Like, so the kind of show goes on, I suppose, in a way. But I know we really enjoyed the last few days all together. And so it was really good, really, 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 really good.
Yeah. Come here, were you surprised at the manner of the victory? Like, you know, such a one-sided final.
We would have watched St. Thomas's play and that kind of, and we were kind of very worried about them, you know. And I think they got a couple of injuries before the game and then a couple of injuries in the game. So that kind of, like, if you're taking four lads out of any team like that, it can really affect their balance and that. But that's the potential that some of our lads have there, to just take over the show. Like, and that's what some of them did. You know, Colin was immense, and Adrian Mullen, he got 5 points in play and hit the post 3 times as well. Like, you know, so that's the potential that they have, you know.
Yeah, it's some shooting, all right. So the 228 you scored was the highest ever score in an All-Ireland Club final. You created 43 scoring chances over the 60 minute. That's a shot every 90 seconds. Like, I mean, it's a complete perfect performance, really.
That's it, yeah. No, it's what you plan to do, I suppose. It always, sometimes it doesn't go like that. But no, everything just seemed to work out for us, you know. And we got every kind of break that was going. It seemed to fall for us. But that's, the forwards, in fairness to them, that's some shooting within 60 minutes of some scoring into it.
Yeah, geez, it is. There's no doubt about that. Come here, it must be a really nice feeling. I have no idea what it feels like. I might from a county final point of view, but you're 5 minutes to go in an All-Ireland club final, and let's be honest, you know at that stage you have it wrapped up. Can you just relax and really enjoy it at that stage and look around into the stand, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, I suppose you kind of do. I said to someone there, not every player gets to do this, you know. Not every player gets to play in Croke Park with your club, so it's a special place to be. And just when you win, it's just all you've been working for is just to get that victory, you know. And then when that comes to reality, it just means everything. And it's so much hard work goes on behind the scenes. All the people that do all the work in the club, and you're just so happy for them, not alone just yourself, but you're so happy for everyone that's put in all the hard work all through the year.
Yeah, no, definitely. And come here, let's be honest, at the start of this year, All-Ireland club titles weren't on your horizons at all, were they?
No, absolutely not. No, it wasn't the start of the year. We said we wanted to get back being competitive in Kilkenny. The last few years haven't went so well for us. So that was the aim, is just maybe try to get back on top in Kilkenny. And we done that. And then after that, you just kind of take it game by game and see where you're going. They say we won Leinster, and that was all, everything was all right. And then we enjoyed our Christmas, and then we got ready for Ballygunner, which was a serious test, and got over the line. So you just kind of take it game by game. But so every year, no one really sets out to win a club. I learned at the start of the year, you just set out to win your own county, and if you can do that, you just take it game by game after that, you know.
Yeah, but we know all these young fellas now, and you know, you won two under 21s. Was there a little bit of quiet optimism in the club that these lads were all coming up and they'd match up with you lads, the Fennellys and yourself and you know, TJ, and you're going to have a good mix?
Absolutely, yeah. We'd be watching their progress. They would have won a minor as well on top of the last two under 21 titles, so the potential is definitely there, you know. But sometimes I think it can be difficult to maybe jump up to the senior ranks, you know. It's a big step up, but them lads are after taking to like ducks to water, you know. There's no bother on them at all, and they just go out and do what they've been doing the whole time, which is winning games and just hurling, just really enjoying themselves. So they've really driven all of us on, really. The kind of older lads have maybe followed in their footsteps and just look how hard they're working at the whole time, and just they've really driven everything on, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing you almost went out in the Kilkenny semi-final.
Yeah, we were steeped, I suppose, against Castle Comer. We got a late goal. Evan Shepton got a late goal. He's half back, so. But I suppose you need that bit of luck sometimes, you know. But it's ultra competitive in Kilkenny. Every team is very, very close.
Yeah.
You get no easy game in Kilkenny, so. But that stands to you then, you know, when you get through them tough games, you just get that winning feeling from them tough games, and it really stands you when you go forward.
Yeah, Michael Fennelly in his speech was brilliant, I thought. It was a great bit of personality in it, but he kind of drew attention to how small a parish it is and the limited resources, and he talked about having two pitches and a primary school that has a pitch, and that it has produced some of the best hurlers that have ever played the game, and that's a fact as well. Tell us, how small is it? I was reading that all the shops in the village are gone and the post office is closed and there's just a pharmacy, a cafe and one pub there now.
That's it, yeah. You know, it's kind of when the motorway was built and then the recession kind of came, everything went around, Ballyhale was kind of gone. So, but having said that, then what happens then, I suppose, the hurling field became the hub of the kind of parish, you know. That's where everyone meets and they go down, the kids train, that kind of thing, and they have parents to be chatting away, So it kind of became the hurling field, kind of comes the hub of it. But yeah, it's really, really small. There's three parishes you might see on our crest there. It's BKK, so that's Knockmile and Ballyhale and Knocktopher. So it's kind of, it was a long, skinny parish, but I'd say no more than 1,200 people in the parish. So to produce what we're doing, it's fair going, all right.
Yeah, you've got good genes there, anyways.
Yeah, that's for sure. Can't be breeding, as Tommy Shepton said. You can't be breeding.
And come here, this is the thing, because it's such a small village, and there's not much there. How are you able to keep all the young fellas there and committed? Because I was listening to Henry before the game. He was saying in 2010, when you were there for an All-Ireland final, something like 10 of the squad were in the under-12 game that same day. So, for such a small village, to not have lads kind of leaving and going elsewhere, if you know what I mean, to keep lads together.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, but I suppose all the lads, they really enjoy hurling, you know. You don't really realise what you're doing. You're just going down, you're enjoying yourselves, you know. You're having the crack. The crack before training will be better than nearly after, you know, because we all go down just enjoy what we're doing, you know. And then when you go out in the field, you take it serious and you do your stuff, and then you come back in, you'll have a bit more crack. So I think lads look forward to going to train more so than feel like they have to go train. You know, everyone's looking forward and can't wait to get down in the field, which is what you do when you're a young lad. And then when you bring up to the senior ranks, I think that's what keeps bringing people back and keeps bringing the young lads back and keeps everyone driving on.
Yeah, exactly. So that one pub has been fairly busy for the last couple of days.
It has, yeah. It got a good old scene, all right. Hopefully keep lads over now. We're back training in a couple of weeks. So.
Well, that's the big challenge, Joey. Like, I mean, if you're trying to have a sneaky pint, you're at nothing going down to that one pub in the village.
No, absolutely. They lower you be fairly quick.
Come here, you're a very unusual one in that you're from Ballyhale, which is completely dominated by hurling at Kilkenny, obviously, as well, and you didn't start hurling until you were 11. What the hell were you doing until you were 11?
Sure. I have a few other things to keep me going, you know, a few businesses. And I went to school in Carrickshock, so I'm at right at the far end of the parish. Literally, my house, one field to the left is Mullavat Parish and three fields to the right is Carrickshock Parish. So I would have went to school in Carrickshock Primary School. So I would have hurled with them when I was underage and then started playing with Ballyhale. So I was hurling under 11 with Ballyhale, under 13 in school with Carrickshock, and then under 12 with Ballyhale as well. So it's kind of an unusual little connection there.
Right, there's definitely is, because we did some work with Carrickshock. They've got the Powers, right? And Michael Rice and all them.
Yeah.
So was there any phone calls being made to your house to join Carrickshock? I'm sure there was back then to your parents.
No. The father had me well warned that he was going to play
for Ballyhale.
That was it.
So not only did you start playing when you were 11, then you went for minor trials and under 21 trials and you weren't really getting in the mix at all there. Like, I mean, you were a late bloomer taking up maybe the game, and you're a late bloomer or with Ballyhale, and you're a late bloomer then kind of making the step up to the very top level.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so at that age I was kind of in for trials, but I knew myself I kind of wasn't good enough, and you know, just didn't happen for me, you know. But I suppose when you're down training with Ballyhale, you're marking the likes of Henry and TJ and Colin and Mick and these lads, you learn so much off marking them. Even when they're after roasting you kind of learn more from maybe marking them. So things just didn't click for me. Just didn't happen for me. But I always loved the hurling. When I was underage in Ballyhale, numbers were very tight. So maybe that didn't help either. But when I was brought into Kilkenny, I still didn't think I was good enough. So maybe I'm not now. But anyway, I'm still there. So it just started to click for me. And then you just start playing. And next thing you know, you're starting in Kilkenny team. And you do all right. And you're starting the next day. So it's just the way it happened, I suppose. I didn't really think about it too much, but it took me a while to get going when I look back on it, I suppose.
So when you were younger then, you would have been marking probably TJ and Henry maybe in training because you were out wing back and stuff. And like, would they be giving you tips during training or after training what they don't like, you know, what they don't like fellas doing, marking them and stuff like that?
Not really, no. You just kind of go out and, like, just go out and do your best on them, you know, and
figure it out yourself.
Figure it out yourself, you know, and you kind of know when you play well and you kind of know when you haven't, you know. So anytime you can stop them lads hurling, it's a fair achievement. So you just learn from that, like, and just try to bring that into the hurling field every day.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your favourite position then? Is it wing back?
I'd say wing back, yeah. Wing back, you're kind of more involved in the game sometimes. So that's probably position I would have started playing with Ballyhale, so that's probably the favourite one, right? Yeah.
So that's it. So JJ being converted from wing back to a full back really screwed you over. This was your ticket back to do the same.
I don't know about that. I wouldn't say that now.
You have to. They're doing that the whole time. Brian Cody's doing it with Pádraig Walsh now as well. He's back out to midfield. You were back out wing back last year for Kilkenny, right? So maybe that's where you're being looked at now again.
Sure, it's hard to know. We'll see how that goes now when we come in further into the year. That won't be long coming up now. I think we've Dublin in something like 7 weeks' time, so that'll be the next big challenge now. And we look back to get back in the field and look forward to getting that challenge on the road.
Yeah, no, exactly. One other question I always wanted to ask you, Joey, is it was the 2016 final when Seamus Callanan cleaned up that day and you were marking him. And you haven't really been looked at for full back for Kilkenny since that. You've been cornerback and wing back. And like, I was thinking, because JJ is a pundit here on our show and Callanan's done the same thing to JJ in an All-Ireland final. I just thought it very cutthroat for one off day on one of the best players in the country. Do you know what I mean? To I don't know, like, I mean, we're not going to start criticising Brian Cody, that's his decision, but even from your own point of view, that could happen to anyone. Shamey Callanan has roasted lots of full backs.
Yeah, Shamey's a savage player. Ah, listen, that's the way it went. Look, when you're in Kilkenny, it's a special place to be, you know. As I said to someone the other day, like, if you can get a number that's under 15, hold on to it as best you can and just do your best when you go. But at the end of the day, if Kilkenny are winning, you should be happy. It doesn't matter where you are, you know. If you're lucky enough to get a number under 15, just hold on to it and do the best that you can with it.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, you're back to training, you were saying, with Kilkenny tonight. So will you all go on the same car? There might be a nice little sing-song going along in your car to Kilkenny training, or how many of you are called in, or do you go together?
There's about 7 of us in there now, so we kind of make our own way there. But yeah, we'll try to get through tonight and get back in the real world, I suppose, and get ready for the next challenge that's ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, come here, Joey. Thanks very much for giving us your time here today, and we'll let you back to work there.
All right. Thanks very much.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park, the same year. And they were being hockey. But the camera went in, there was a fella warming up. Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, the fuck. He was massive. Legs, arse, spilt. But I bust out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, you can't touch this. Look at my eyes.
OK, so the first one we'll look at here in Paddy Power predictions is Galway and Waterford. So this, obviously, like we said, is in Nolan Park. This is the second game. This is pretty even in the bookies. It's 5-6, Galway slight favourites, Waterford slight outsiders, 6-5. I think most people haven't seen Waterford, Cheddar, would be very enthused about their prospects for the year. Obviously, we can't draw too much into a league, but we know Clare are a serious team, and Clare are not the type of team that think they're too big for their boots, that they're not going to go down and try and win in Walsh Park. So for them to put up that score against them, definitely, I think a lot of people around the country are sitting up and taking a little bit of notice of Waterford now.
Yeah, no, I agree, Willie. And I think it's not necessarily the results, actually. It's, I suppose, the feeling come out of the camp and that. And look, I think there was, we spoke about this last year and before Parik was appointed, and we were just making the point that, you know, this was a difficult transition for a manager to be able to go in when there was a certain style in place already, and that may needed to be changed, and then to make sure that you had all the players on board and, you know, fully behind your thinking and all of that, was a difficult job. And I think that succession has happened really, really well. I think Parik might have been, a little bit farcing in the sense that he was in 1B and had maybe, wasn't playing the top teams in the first games and that, and had probably had a chance to get his feet under the table and get to know players and get across his point of view the way the team that he wanted the team to play and all of that. So he had a little bit of time to do this, but the succession has been good, and there's a different sort of shape to Waterford now. The comments from players and that, appear to be, they're very, very happy in the setup and they're very keen to push on with their careers now and go away and win something. So the music around the team is good, and that's always nice to hear, because when it's the other way, it's difficult to pull that back. But not alone that, but the results have backed up that, particularly recent results against Galway and against Clare have backed that up, and they're in a really, really good position. And obviously playing Galway again, haven't beaten them recently, I know it's in a different pitch and so on, but look, Willie, Waterford are a big team. Waterford are a team that had been in an All-Ireland recently, and are certainly one of the top teams in the country, and probably don't need that type of psychological motivation about who they're playing or where they're going to play or anything like that. They obviously don't really care who they play or where they play. They are good enough, and more importantly, they think and believe that they're good enough to win the top games. So I think they're in a good position, and in a good position going into Sunday as well. And I think there's a couple of other little things about Waterford, if we just talk about them for a minute, Willie. They were very unfortunate with the level of injuries last year. Yeah. I think if that happened to them again this year, they'd be well able to carry that. They've found some new players. Some players have returned. And keep going back to that dynamic now in the dressing room. There is some serious competition for places, both defence and attack. And, you know, it's interesting to think that we're not hugely talking about Michael Welch or Kevin Moran or Jamie Barron. There's a lot of other players here that are stepping up to the mark. And yet those other players are really excelling here. So it would look like that they're in a really, really good place. You know, so, but again, like everything else, it's like the having the plans in the army, and they're never really tested until you meet the opposition. The plan could go straight out the window. But they're, you know, they're going to step into quality players now. They're going to be playing Galway, and if the coaches get through that, they're going to be playing another quality team, and then they're stepping into Munster, which is real dog-eat-dog championship, and they're going to have to be consistent and play every day to that level. But they have the tools to play that. They also have some big players, big physical players that, you know, you can mix it up. You can go short and you can go skillful 30-metre or hurley passes to people on the move, or if you want to, you can mix it up and go along. They have certainly a mix of players within their team now that I think, you know, they're really going to have a right go off of this summer, I would think.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, Patrick Fanning played down the systems. He said, we've only tweaked a couple of things, so I think there's too much emphasis on systems, but at the end of the day, the lads are making plenty of good decisions, and we ended up putting up a big score on the board. Now, he's playing down the system thing, but I would say it was pretty obvious. Like, there was occasions where Clare gave a ball in and it was a 2-on-2 situation in there. We never would have seen that from a defensive point of view from Waterford. And we never would have seen so many forwards left up the field. Now, we know that Gleeson and Pádraig O'Mahony and these lads were just seemed to be given free roles. So for me, there seemed to be very obvious system changes. I'm not sure what Pádraig's thinking there would be trying to play them down.
I didn't see that article, Willie, but I wouldn't think that he was trying to play it down. I think if you were just asked the specific question, are you playing with a sweeper or are you not, he'd just say, no, I'm not. If you were to ask him, you know, am I screening my defence by some other method, he mightn't tell you, but, you know, it's likely that they are. But, you know, even the likes of, you know, I'm interested to look at Tommy Ryan, you know, came on for a couple of games with Waterford over the last couple of years, a very, very quick player who sort of plays off the cuff.
Yeah.
And it'd be difficult for that type of player to play within a system where you're expecting him to do specific roles and all of that. So, you know, certainly there has been some changes, but, you know, you know, look at the quality of the player you have there. You know, even some of the quality of players that, you know, may not have yet to come in, the likes of Morris and Tom Devine and you know,
we actually listed them out. Conor Gleeson, the Fives brothers, Brian O'Halloran, Jake Dillon, Patrick Curran, Tom Devine weren't involved at all. Like, I mean, yeah. And Brick Walsh and Morris Shanahan came in off the bench. Mm. Like, they've an incredible squad now.
That have, which, and there's a couple of players that I think are going to make some statements this summer as well. The likes of Conor Prunty and Conor Roach and Shane McNulty. I just think that to have a panel of, you know, physically dominating players, if they want to.
Tyke DeBurka is another one that wasn't
yeah.
there.
Yeah, no, they have. Look, there's a serious, serious panel there. And they were obviously a serious team. They just may not have all of those players. They didn't have them available to them last year for obvious reasons, for injury and so on. And you have probably the most dynamic hurler. You know, if you were to talk about TJ and Tony Kelly, you're talking about Ozzie Gleeson in that bracket. And, you know, Ozzie Gleeson is a game-breaker player, and there's not that many of them around. These players like that can turn the game themselves in terms of their own performance and what they can do. So they have a serious team here to look at a league semi-final and to push on into the Munster Championship and further. You know, they certainly should have some serious ambitions about going places.
What I like about them as well, and I've mentioned this about other teams, is that Pádraig Fanning's come in. He sees Gleeson and Pádraig O'Mahony, the wing forwards. And, like, I mean, it's not like Limerick. He's not copying Limerick where he's getting them to drop back too far. They scored 4-5 points each from play. You know, they have their own system, and they can absolutely do that short stick pass in which they're very comfortable doing. Mm. But they have they're developing the Waterford style for the Waterford players rather than the thing. And I mentioned this about Tipperary on a recent show, that they need to probably do that as well, because the easy thing often to do is see what the All-Ireland champions did, and, you know, Galway and Limerick would drop their half forward lines back, you know, fairly deep. But not every team needs to do that.
I always say this, Willie, you play to the strengths of your players. Now, you need to be careful as well, and you definitely don't follow fashion, because you may have a completely different type of player than the Limericks or whatever, you know, in terms of the way they play. But there's a few principles that, you know, will always hand you in good stead, and one of them is to be defensively strong. How you do that depends on the players that you have available to you. And look, sometimes you see a team maybe playing 11 deep out the field, and you know he's obviously a link taking the ball off the back line and that, so they don't lose possession, but he's also a defensive screen there if that's what you want. So a lot of teams would have different ways of doing it, and you know it may not be absolutely obvious, but within the team themselves they know where everybody is and their roles in the team and that. So a sense that, you know, Waterford will develop as they go along here as well, that, you know, you may see some different little trends as they go along through the year.
Yeah, Jamie Barron seems to keep them ticking over as usual anyway, and this short stick passing game seems to suit him down to the ground, doesn't it? But like, I mean, Galway then, sometimes I look at the Galway team and I think, geez, Galway are in they're in experimentation mode and all this, and like, I mean, Joe Cooney won't be there this year, he's away in Australia. Johnny Glynn, I think, is in America, he hasn't been seen, so we don't know whether those two are even going to be there. They'll have Conor Cooney, David Burke and Dahi Burke back from All-Ireland club duty. But other than Conor Cooney, David Burke, Dahi Burke and Adrian Toohey, now they are four starters. Galway aren't in necessarily the experimentation mode. Maybe these lads are all getting a run because lads haven't been available and might not be available.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, well, certainly some of them were driven by that. They just simply weren't available. So. But I'd say Michal was looking at maybe keeping a reasonably settled team. I think last year went maybe learn some things. And look, you never know these things, Woolly, because you could do it one way 1 year and it might work brilliantly for you. You can do the very same next year and it go completely wrong or vice versa.
Yeah.
But I think last year, and it's interesting actually the contrast between the way Limerick have won in All-Ireland and what they've done the following year and what Galway have done the previous year. And I'd say Michal knew that he needed a little bit more strength and depth. I think he's found it a little bit. Probably didn't trust young Concannon last year as much as I think he can this year.
But he looks a very good player to me now.
I know he is, and like there's, you know, that Thomas Monaghan, there's some players around there that certainly can do a job and for Galway. But it's most important, obviously, to get, you know, some of those big name players back as well. Joe Cooney would be a big loss to them, you know, in terms of ball winning ability. Johnny Glynn also in that sort of route one hurling, if that's what you wanted to do. But I'd say Michal might have learned a little bit from the All-Ireland last year as well.
And that's it. And maybe he might not even pick Skehill for those puckouts. He might change his puckout strategy altogether.
That's, you know, I think definitely they need to look at a lot of that. And, you know, I sense that Michal and Franny Ford will be looking at that, you know, they were very, very close. Bear in mind, they were very, very close last year. There wasn't a puck of a ball in it, really, from winning in Ireland. But you don't know how the opposition is going to jump ahead of you this year. You may take it that every team's going to improve 10%, so you'll probably have 15% to improve. And I have no doubt that, you know, they will look at that and maybe come up with some different little ways of playing. What's interesting, that they seem to be playing some players that we would have seen in sort of different positions, in Mannion being out in the middle of the field, and at maybe a different, you know, looking at different setups maybe of playing. I think, you know, Sunday could be interesting because, you know, I'd say that, you know, Michal doesn't need to win the league here. Of course you go and want to win it and you want to win every match and that, but if they had a good performance and found some things and found maybe a slightly different way of playing, that would be great. And bear in mind, you know, they're on the road now for a couple of years and a lot of teams would have figured out, you know, the key way that they play, and, you know, in terms of negating that and having their own counter-attacks in place and that. And, you know, it would probably serve Galway well to come along with something slightly different this year.
Yeah, because I think Galway would be served well in making the final because they could do with Conor Cooney, David Burke, Dahi Burke back on that team and actually be able to get Brian Concannon playing with Conor Cooney or whatever he wants to do. Because if they don't, well, then they'll have these fellas back. Maybe Adrian Toohey will be back. And you'll be looking at either going back to very close to your All-Ireland win team, or you'll be back to a team that hasn't played together. You know what I mean? For the first round of the Leinster Championship.
Yeah, no, I always am a firm believer in, you know, when you get momentum, and that sort of generates a huge amount of energy in your dressing room, and it just generates energy around the county and all of that. I think there's a lot of positivity about that. And look, nobody will go out to lose a league semi-final, is all I'll say.
Yeah.
But if you were lucky enough to win it and go into a league and win it again, you know, I think in terms of blending your team against serious opposition and being able to judge, you know, does this player have it and is he able to deliver it on the big days? Well, look, you know, winning the league and performing on those days would certainly be helpful and would give a lot of confidence to the likes of Brian Concannon and those. I don't think he needs it. I think he's a serious, serious player. But you know, if that was the case and, you know, gelling together and, you know, playing as a team and just getting that cohesion in your backs, that cohesion in your forwards, forwards and understanding one another, the more games you play, obviously, that's going to get hardwired even better.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, the other one is a bit more skewed for the bookies. They have Dublin at 3-1 outsiders and Limerick at 3-10. So, you know, I think Matty Kenny has been talking a lot about the Dublin character. And he was talking about, he said, last year we saw sizeable leads being wiped out every week. This is in the championship. Most of the games in last year's championship were won in the last 5, 6, 7 minutes. It's something that every team has to be able to do to manage the game coming down the stretch. And he's talking about that in the context of Dublin sticking in there with Tip and sticking in there with Tip. And that would have pleased him no end, Cheddar, that, like, I mean, they stuck in there. They played with the wind and their lead was wiped out 5 minutes into the second half and they still won that game. Like, I mean, we were talking about this on Monday. That have serious, serious confidence, you know, improved those lads' confidence no end.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, the recent wins have you know, given a lot of momentum to Dublin. And look, I've said this before, Willie, you don't know what teams are doing in the earlier part of the year. Are they, you know, are they on a really, really tough training program?
Yeah.
And, you know, some of their earlier league games, you know, it would have been questionable in terms of their performance and, you know, where they were going to go. But you don't know. And, you know, you don't know if there's some key players missing of the game plan that Matty wants to bring in. But certainly the recent matches have brought him on a lot. And I just think that the odds on Sunday are not right. I think Dublin actually have... they have a lot of the tools necessary to take on Limerick. They have some really, really big players in their defence. So the air game that Limerick enjoys over a lot of other teams will not be as clear, I think, on Sunday.
Crummy'd physically match up to Garrod Hegarty, wouldn't he? Where
All along that halfback line will. And you know, they're strong. And, you know, they have a lot of players back. And, you know, Matty will have a more possession oriented game that they're not going to be giving the ball away as cheaply. You know, if he's using the Coolham model, well, that's what you're going to see. And look, he's a serious team with him and a serious management team with him. You know, he's had Greg Kennedy with him for a couple of years. He has Mickey McCulloch in with him. You know, Mickey would have had a lot of success coaching. He was with Ballyboden last year and would have been when Meade were really making leaps and bounds over a couple of years. He was involved with him. And he'd have Owen Roche with him coaching that, you know, would know Dublin underage hurling inside out. So he's, you know, he's a serious, serious team along with him. And there was some serious players, you know, available to them. And I think, you know, once Matty gets his method of play and his system of play refined and rehearsed and rehearsed, I really do believe that they are a serious threat in Leinster and beyond.
You've said that all along, haven't you? And, like, the thing about the difference about this year is that under Gilroy, whether you like it or not, they beat no big team. Now, they got close to Kilkenny. This year, already in the league, they've beaten Waterford and Tip. Last year in the league quarterfinal, which they made, they lost to Tip by 11 points, and this year they go and beat them. So, like, I mean, Matty Kenny has done so far. Now, obviously, we have to qualify all this by saying it's the league and we don't know, maybe Tipperary were on another training camp, or you don't know where all their priorities lie. We'll know that. We won't know that until the championship. But on the face of it, they've definitely moved on and improved from last year.
Well, if you just compare Coola, I just thought that... that, you know, Gilroy's game plan, I wasn't too sure where that was going to go next, because I just think that you know, the route one with the following players, I just think it would be easy to defend once you figure it out and once you had the right players, obviously, to do it. When you saw Coola play, and, you know, Coola beat some serious teams, but they had a real, real definite way of playing, very, very high, very intense work rate. And he has all those players aboard with him again, including a lot of the people that he had involved with him in Coola.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that and you know, bear in mind as well that, you know, the Limerick management team was in place for a year and we didn't see that real marked improvement in them in year one. And it took Paul Kinnerk and John Kiley and the rest of the management team a sort of a year to figure out everybody else and get the right people in the right places and all of that. And, you know, it's going to take Matty a little while. You know, there's going to be a couple of sort of ropey days before he'll get things right. But I have no doubt that they have the raw material, and they definitely have the size and physique and the ambition to really make a mark on Leinster this year and maybe the All-Ireland series.
Yeah, and Michael Carton said here on Monday that Matty Kenny's big thing is to take your man on. It doesn't matter if you're a cornerback, you're a wing back, you go past your man, you're immediately out in that overlap territory then, and then you can play the short passes and you can draw a man and leave it over his head. And it's basic enough, but like, I mean, it does make, not many managers would encourage every player in the field to go try and take your man on and go past him.
I suppose that's your hurling philosophy. Is your hurling philosophy pace, precision, possession, precision, physicality? If it is, you know, they are critical, I suppose, principles of play that you've got to rely on to make that work for you. You've got to take on your man, you've got to create two and ones coming out of the defence and have good deliveries and have mobility in that in the forward line. And look, Limerick have brought that to a completely different level, I suppose, in the last year.
And but the support play, I suppose, is vital in that system too.
Absolutely massive. Yeah, and you look, at the end of the day, you've got to have shooters up front as well. You know, we referred to this before, Wooly, like Tip of incredible shooters up front, but just the wiring up to that probably needs a little bit of work. And you know, I'm really, really keen to look at how Tip play and look at Eamonn O'Shea's influence just in that particular part alone. How do you wire up the ball to be able to win it, work it through the lines, work it to the right men, put it over the bar and go back and do it all over again umpteen times during the course of the game?
Yeah.
And I think Dublin have some serious talent.
I can't wait to see Dublin at the weekend, actually, because they haven't really been on, I don't think we've seen them on television at all. We've just been seeing highlights. So to see Dublin under the new manager, six games in, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It'd be very interesting to see them against Limerick.
Yeah, no, and I think it'll probably be a good test of where they are and that as well. You know, as I say, I think to have the tools to trouble Limerick, you know, whether their conversion, you know, whether they'll score all the opportunities that they create is just questionable at the minute. So you know how clinical you are in front of goal with the opportunities that you make for yourself at this level now is you know, they're going to move on to a different level. I think they may have to maybe do a little bit more in that, but they certainly have all the other parts in place, and I think they're playing the right team on Sunday in terms of, you know, a team that plays to a definite way that you've got to figure out how to counter tactic the way they play and then go on and win the match yourself. I think this is going to be very interesting. I'm really, really looking forward to that game.
Yeah, no, me too. So on the Limerick side, Mike Casey's back and William O'Donoghue are back. So they have everybody fit. I think the Richie McCarthy's have a long-term injury and I think Brown is a long-term injury as well. So they're absolutely gone for the whole year. But anyone that is available is fit. Casey and O'Donoghue played an in-house game on Friday night. So John Kiley was asked about his first 15. And again, I kind of get a little bit obsessed about this first 15 the year after winning the All-Ireland, because you see Jim Gavin's approach to it in the football, and he doesn't care if you won him in All-Ireland. He wants to change it up a little bit and keep it fresh. And John Kiley was asked about the first 15. He says, "That's a narrative I'm not comfortable with. There seems to be a continuous reflection back to how many of the All-Ireland team are being selected as if they're the strongest team." And I'm guilty of that. I would say, well, Limerick only had 9 of their starting team, you know, so that's obviously annoying Kiley because they've a brilliant panel. He says, "The starting 15 last year's All-Ireland, they were the strongest 15 at the time, or what we deemed to be the team we wanted to start the game in the All-Ireland final. And I find it quite frustrating that we're reflecting back on that 15 all the time, and I don't see the relevance. That was August 2018. This is March 2019. I thought that was a very positive kind of thing to say, and a very positive message to be sending his players as well.
I think it's a really sensible message, yeah. Wooly. I think, you know, there's real importance in what he said here. Because he is saying that this could change from match to match as well, and it depends on my needs, my game plan, or the opposition game plan, and so on and so on. You know, I've said this a number of times last year. I think actually somebody on the show, Wooly asked, you know, why Galway weren't freshening things up and all of that. You can only freshen things up if you have better players to play. You certainly kind of just throw in somebody to freshen things up. And that can only happen in the training field or in matches. And unless you're seeing that, don't make a decision just to freshen something up.
I accept that point. But say if it was 50-50, a really difficult call. I think that's when the manager usually goes on, well, he did it for me in September and I'll do it, you know, ahead of this new lad. Instead of going, well, this new lad will send a message to the whole team that nobody's safe. Do you know what I mean? Maybe if it's a 50-50 call.
Yes, but just think of that for a minute. That might have been all right a couple of years ago. But you have somebody that's used to the game plan that, you know, they may have a specific role in that. If they've done that for the last year or the last 2 or 3 years, well, it wouldn't make natural sense to me to trust that person to do a job for you on Sunday because they have done it. If it is 50-50, and look, at the end of the day, some of these things are just judgment calls that you're seeing in front of you. And, you know, if you were to lay out a criteria why you pick one person over the other, it might be difficult to do that. Sometimes you're trusting, you know, what the feeling in your stomach that this person is going to deliver on Sunday, and sometimes you get it right and sometimes you get it wrong, and that's just the honesty about the thing.
Yeah, no, that's true. So you were at the Laois match. So just two questions about Limerick from the Laois match. Barry Nash played wing back. I had never heard of him as a wing back before, a real speedy forward, I thought he was. And the knock-on effect of him being wing back is that Dan Morrissey got a chance at full back. So again, options all over the place for Kylie. How did Nash, what did you think of Nash that night and Morrissey as well?
They were all very impressive that night and played to the, I suppose, Limerick style of play, you know, real physical in the contested ball, real quick, moving in possession and good use of the ball. So they all just fitted into the way they play. And, you know, you just figure that they've been training together as a group and as a team up to last September. And, you know, obviously have spent a lot of time together since as well. So there's a real family feel to the team and looking at the way they played and that. But there's some interesting things. Last year, there was three or four in the Pearshield players, including the likes of William O'Donoghue, including Peter Casey, including Young Dempsey, and including that new chap whose name is
Bylan.
They're all in the Pearshield players. Didn't get a starting jersey with Limerick. Who's to say that if they hadn't been in a club All-Ireland and a real play at All-Ireland, that they wouldn't have got that jersey and went on and won it? Just think of the competitiveness in the dressing room with the likes of those players outside of the new young players coming through in Limerick.
Yeah.
That look, these are even though they're very young and they're all in their very, very early 20s and, you know, have a massive career ahead of them. But just think of the real competition for places. And I said that, against Laois. I remember Shane tracking back a Laois player. He certainly wouldn't have done that for, you know, the last 3 or 4 years that I've seen him. He was real a person that was, you know, was really, really good on the ball, but his work rate off the ball. These are working really, really hard just to hold on to their jerseys. We're coming back now in full circle in here, Willie, and nearly comparing, you know, the dynamic that's in Limerick at the minute because of the volume of real quality players in their squad is the very, very same as in the Kilkenny dressing room or any successful team. You mentioned Dublin, any successful team. And, you know, that's absolute gold dust for a manager because at the end of the day, that's what's actually driving the performance of the team.
Yeah, okay, so this is Paddy Power predictions. So what are your predictions for the two matches? Who's going to be in the league final?
I think, look, the game's in Nolan Park, obviously quite close to water. I think they will bring a good crowd to this one, Willie. And I think Galway, obviously, you know, Michal will want to go out and win the match and that. But I think they might have a little bit more work to do to settle their team in that. I think just water will get through in that one. The other one's a really, really interesting one. I mean, you know, 99% of people will side with Limerick here, and it's difficult to look past them considering that their success and, you know, the quality that's in their team and that, and the players that you've just mentioned coming back. I do think they'll beat Dublin, but I think that could be a really, really interesting game. So I probably will go for Waterford and for Limerick.
Waterford and Limerick. Okay, I'll agree on that one. But like you said, Limerick, probably two of them be close enough.
I would think so.
Games, fingers crossed. Right, listen, that's all we've time for, Cheddar. Thanks very much. We'll be back on Monday as usual, and we'll review the two matches. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.